Next on BYUSN, the Cougars are on the road tomorrow when they take on SMU. How many road games does BYU need to win this season? Talk to former linebacker Ben Bywater about what the BYU defense needs to do to tame the Mustangs offense.
The NFL season kicks off tonight. We play This or That to discuss expectations for Puka Nacua, Fred Warner, Taysom Hill, and more Cougars in the NFL. Plus, BYU basketball signs another big-time player, how he fits into the team, and why it's creating so much buzz.
I thought the roster was full. Bring them all on, baby. Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. It is Thursday, September 5th. I'm Jerem Jordan in Provo. He is on the lookout in Dallas for Luke Staley, Spencer Linton.
Indeed, Jerem, I am at Doak Walker Plaza,
hey.
Just on campus here at Southern Methodist University. And how about a little history lesson? So Ownsby Stadium was the original stadium for SMU. It was essentially deconstructed in 1998. They saved some of the original brick and then built Gerald Ford Stadium behind me with some of that brick put into the facade here. But wouldn't you know it, that Doak Walker passed away in 1998, so it's almost fitting that when Doak Walker went away, the stadium that he made so famous went away as well, and now we've got the new Ford Stadium. It was dedicated in 2000, so it's 24 years old, and hopefully BYU remains perfect against the Mustangs after tomorrow night's game.
Professor Linton bringing it. This makes sense because when BYU beat SMU in 1997 when they were in the WAC together and Kalani Sitake was a sophomore or a redshirt freshman, they played in the Cotton Bowl. They didn't play on campus at SMU. This is the first on-campus game in Dallas with BYU and SMU. Good stuff, Professor Linton. More of that coming up throughout the program
as we
rise and shout. Go ahead.
I was going to say, wouldn't you know, like, BYU's got some history with the Doak Walker as well, right? We have a Doak Walker Award winner.
Yes, we do. Luke Staley.
Yes, we do. Again, there are multiple ties. I think we forget about that. Like, he literally was the best running back in college football, is so amazing that he did it at BYU.
8.2 yards per carry, bro. Like, his 2001 specifically, which you're referencing, was the greatest rushing season BYU had ever seen until Tyler Allgeier broke that single season record. The argument for Luke's 01 versus Tyler's 2021 is a pretty fun conversation in greatest rushing seasons of all time at BYU. Good stuff, as Spencer joins us from, we'll call it Luke Staley Plaza today. How about that? All rise and shout. It's time for What's Trending. BYU always loved being the underdog.
I think BYU's defense is certainly good enough to hold SMU to 28 or fewer.
We're excited for that challenge and excited to go down there and have a good game against them.
What's Trending is presented by Tim Daly Ford, part of the Tim Daly Auto Group, serving Utah since 1968. ESPN's Football Power Index gives BYU a whopping 21% chance to win this game tomorrow night against SMU. We both said that we believe BYU is a 7-win football team in the regular season this year. Hey, that's 2.5 above what Vegas thinks. So, how many road wins does BYU need to get to 7 wins as they embark on their first road game tomorrow night?
This is a loaded question, Jerem, because of the stat that you bring up. 21% chance for BYU to win at SMU. I typically break this down into, okay, if they played the game 10 times, you're telling me the Cougars would only win 2 of those 10? I'm just not buying that. It doesn't feel right, but that said, the conversation is bigger now as you look at every team that BYU will play on the road. To get to 7, which you and I believe BYU is certainly capable of, we think they will do it. You break down the schedule, the Cougars probably have to go at least 500 on the road. So they got to go 3-3, I think, to give themselves space and a little bit of comfort to get to 7 wins in the regular season. And if they're going to win 3 road games, gosh, I don't see how they feel good about doing that if they don't win tomorrow night. So maybe I'm putting too much pressure on them in this game tomorrow night, but think about it. If BYU doesn't beat SMU tomorrow night, then certainly they have to beat Wyoming, but then you have to go win 2 conference road games. Is that going to be at Baylor? Is it going to be at UCF? Arizona State all of a sudden looks way better because they destroyed Wyoming, and Kenny Dillingham's a good coach. He's going to get that program going right. What are they in late November in BYU's final road game? So this is interesting. I feel like BYU would be so much ahead of the curve, obviously, if they can get this one tomorrow night with that 21% chance. But I say 3-3, which adds to the intrigue and the importance of winning the road opener tomorrow night. What do you think?
It's a minimum 3-3. It's got to be 3-3 or better. Excuse me. If BYU is going to get to 7-5 in the regular season, are they going to go 4-2 at home? They already have one win. Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Houston feel like the three best opportunities at home. But on the road, SMU, Wyoming, Arizona State certainly feel like that. You got to win this game or it's like, shoot, what other ones are you going to get? Can BYU go 4-2 at home where you have four ranked teams on the schedule right now? And do we believe that BYU could have a better road record than home record? It's going to be tough, man. It's like, this is a tough schedule. You're playing Power Four football. Where's it going to come? And I think BYU's got to get this game tomorrow night to feel confident that 7 is possible. Again, during this five-game road losing streak that BYU has, they're only scoring 17 a game. They give up 39 a game, -5 in turnover margin. You look at the road schedule with FPI win percentage. SMU, 21%. Wyoming, 79%. Baylor, 40%. Almost. UCF, only 17.6%. What? Utah, 23. Arizona State, 31. So which games is BYU going to shock FPI in? Which, by the way, I found NCAInsiders.com yesterday, which is powered by CFB Graph, Parker Fleming, Stats of War. I love his stuff on Twitter. You can compare both teams. They have a win percentage of 50.3 for BYU, which is way better. Which I like a lot.
Yeah.
So, 50-50, I don't know. But we'll see. BYU's got to show up in this game. Because if you don't win this one, you need some momentum. You need some mojo. You should be Wyoming. But if you can win this one, you got a real chance of 3-0 and feeling good out of the gate. BYU feels like things are different. Well, you have to perform differently. And that means winning on the road.
For sure. And it kind of feels like, if BYU loses this game, then maybe my expectations for the season go back to, okay, just get to 6 wins. But we feel confident that BYU is going to play well, as they so often have early in the season, and go undefeated in non-conference. Don't be surprised if they're 3-0. Again, that's our standpoint. But if they don't beat SMU tomorrow night, then I think I take a step back and say, okay, now my win expectation goes to 6 and just to that bowl eligibility line. David Nixon was talking about the momentum that this could build for BYU. This is super important. Early opportunity for the Cougars. One, yes, to get ahead of the curve, but also to snap a 5-game road losing streak. We just showed you some numbers, and BYU's statistics have been abysmal. They've averaged only 17 points a game during this 5-game road losing streak that they're currently in. It's time to snap that. And they've been outgained by 170 yards. In those games.
Woof.
They're -5 combined in the turnover margin. Jerem, does it not feel like if BYU is going to win road games that turnover statistic becomes even more critical?
Totally.
Because those things take the air out of a home stadium in a way that it's hard to explain. You can feel it. If a road team comes in and they are taking advantage of turnovers, it just quiets the crowd in such a hurry. That is a critical number for BYU. If they want to beat SMU tomorrow and get off this 5-game road losing streak, Schneid, maybe they have to win the turnover margin tomorrow against the Mustangs.
Let me give you this stat given to me by Colton Potter in my earpiece. That's why I wear one. BYU has more turnovers than touchdowns in this 5-game road losing streak. Certainly have to score, and you can't turn it over. Gregor Bowe had a great stat, which I mentioned earlier this week. If BYU just doesn't turn it over in the Stocky era, 30-4. Just doesn't turn it over. Which is wild because you still have to score. But if you don't turn it over, BYU pretty good. So let's look for BYU to hopefully keep the ball in their hands and find the end zone aplenty.
All right, well, so we'll finish with this. Are we in agreement that the game at SMU is more difficult for BYU than the game in Waco at Baylor? Because FPI suggests that it's way more difficult at SMU, but to me, they kind of feel like similar games. So before we hop onto the next topic, do you feel like that is fair, that the SMU game is a tougher road contest than what BYU is going to face on September 28th in Waco?
It does, because of what SMU did last year and who they returned. Baylor struggled last year. So I'm interested in seeing how much SMU is. Are they comparable to last year? Because last year's team was very good. But now they're playing in a P4. What injuries, you know, happened to Baylor prior to getting there? Can BYU avenge the loss in Waco from a couple years ago? I don't know. It seems like SMU still has a lot to prove because they're in a P4 conference. BYU last year walked in and it was harder than they thought. It was 5-7. So we'll see, man. What do you think?
But they have their name tag.
Yeah. They're close. I'm going to give the edge to SMU because of the recent resume, for sure. I feel like they probably have more speed on the outside than Baylor does. That's saying something. There's talent all over Texas, but it's an interesting conversation for sure. But we do agree BYU's got to win at least 3 road games if they're going to get to the 7 that we projected when this whole thing started up. Okay, on to topic 2. It's the start of the NFL season today. We're watching NFL football tonight and a primetime game with our guy Andy Reid and his new starting left tackle, Kingsley Suamataia, as the 2-time defending Super Bowl champions take on Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. We're going to go big picture here with a bunch of Cougars in the NFL as we discuss expectations of this or that, if you will, Jerem. Let's begin with Puka Nacua and Taysom Hill. Last season, they both scored 6 touchdowns apiece. Now, we're taking out throwing touchdowns for Taysom, just touchdowns that he scored, whether rushing or receiving.
Yeah.
And it's an even 6 between the two. So this season, who scores more touchdowns? Is it Puka in his NFL sophomore season, or is it the newly named captain for the New Orleans Saints, Taysom Hill?
I go with Puka. Give me 7 touchdowns for Puka, 1 up from what he did last year. There were only 7 guys that had 10 or more touchdowns receiving, by the way. For Taysom, rushing and running can be a thing. Hey, maybe Puka scores a rushing touchdown in some fashion. I have Puka with 7. What do you have?
I'm going to go with Puka as well. I think there's going to be a more concerted effort to get him in the end zone and find him there. He had a ton of yards. It was a remarkable rookie season. Catches and yards receiving, 1 for the NFL history books. But the one thing that he didn't do that didn't jump off the page, if you will, was score a ton of touchdowns. I think there's going to be a more concerted effort to find Puka Nacua and get him in the end zone more. So, yeah, I'm going to give him a slight edge over Taysom Hill in that category.
2 years ago, Tyler Algier and Jamal Williams both rushed for 1,000 yards in a season in the NFL, which was awesome. Last year, Tyler ran for 683, no thanks to Bijan Robinson. Jamal Williams ran for 306. Will Tyler Algier double up Jamal Williams' rushing numbers again?
I hope not. I hope that Jamal Williams is given more of an opportunity in year 2 with the Saints. So I don't think he's going to double him up. I do think Tyler Algier will have more rushing yards than Jamal this season just because he's going to be more of a prominent back in an offense that, frankly, Arthur Smith, he wants to run the ball more as a Falcons organization. I don't know if Kirk Cousins will change that at all, but I think Tyler will have more rushing yards. I don't think it's going to be a double up scenario. The Saints had a little bit of a struggle last season, generally speaking, with their offense overall. Jamal's going to find more footing there, so it'll be closer, but Tyler will be the leader, but I do not think he's going to double up Jamal. How do you see it?
I think he doubles him up again just by a hair. I think, Jamal's really? Role as RB2 is very different as Tyler Algier's role as kind of 1B. I wouldn't call him the second running back. I'd call him kind of 1B with Bijan Robinson. They like both of them. I think what happened last year, there'll be a similar output. Tyler's not going to get the carries enough to get to 1,000 again, nor will Jamal. It's a different situation than what they had a couple years ago. Give me Tyler Algier to double up the yards again.
All right, let's take this conversation to the defensive side, shall we, Jerem? The 2 most prominent players for BYU on that side of the ball in the NFL are clearly Fred Warner with the San Francisco 49ers and Kyle Van Noy with the Baltimore Ravens, who we will watch tonight against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Last year, KVN had a career high. This late in his career, 9 sacks. Fred had 6 tackles for loss. So we're comparing each player with those specific defensive categories. Who's going to have more this season? Kyle Van Noy with sacks or Fred Warner with tackles for loss?
Fred had another good year. 6 is a little low for that number. They like to drop him in coverage because he's good defending over the middle as well. and then he can pursue if it's a run or whatnot. The 9 sacks from KVN was incredible. He, like, was out of the league for a sec, came back in, had 9 sacks on a very good defense for Mike McDonald, the defense coordinator, who's now the head coach of my Seattle Seahawks. So I have KVN doing it again. I think that Kyle will have good numbers. Fred's TFLs will go up, but I think Kyle still gets 7 or 8 sacks this year. I think he has another good year.
Did Kyle Van Noy even play a full season with the Ravens when he had the career-high 9 sacks? I don't even think he played the full slate, did he? Goodness. And then he still puts together 9 sacks.
13
games.
So if
you do give Kyle the full – exactly. You give him the full season, that gives him the edge. It's going to be Kyle Van Noy with quarterback sacks. Even though I agree with you, Fred's going to be – Fred's the greatest linebacker in the game right now. His tackles for loss will go up. But even if they do go up, now Kyle's got a full season. Watch him have a new career high. It's funny. Like, he's rejuvenated. He's the old man in the locker room, but it feels like he is playing his best football right now. Really fun to watch KVN do his thing. KVN does it again, Jaron.
I was going to say, if you listen closely, you can hear Greg saying that upstairs. With Zach Wilson and Jaren Hall both on new teams this season, true or false, BYU will have one quarterback playing a game this year.
This is true. I think Zach Wilson will see the field. I don't know about Jaren Hall because he is on the practice squad. He's going to have to be elevated. And that would take an unfortunate twist in Seattle for sure to get Jaren to being in a game. There's been some injuries and some other factors, people not playing well. So I don't think Jaren's going to see the field this year for the Seahawks. I do believe Zach will play in a game. So I'm going true here. How about you?
This is true because Taysom Hill is going to throw a pass. So there will be there will be two. No, I don't think Jaren Hall is going to get in the game this year. It'd have to take something crazy, like you said, behind Geno Smith, same house. So we'll see, man.
All right. This is really cool that BYU has a number of players in a prominent position to potentially compete for a Super Bowl. So which Cougar in the NFL is most likely to play in a Super Bowl this season? Is it the Chiefs, Andy Reid, and Kingsley again, or is it maybe somebody else?
Certainly feels like Kingsley Suamataia and the Chiefs feel like a pretty obvious and promising pick. Fred Warner with the Niners feels interesting. Kyle Van Noy with the Ravens seems interesting. I'm certainly hoping Jaren Hall is on the 53 when the Seahawks somehow shock the world and go to the Super Bowl, but yeah, the safe pick is Kingsley or Fred. Heck, they might meet up again. Who knows?
Jeremy, it's Ryan Rico and the Cincinnati Bengals.
Nice
Are
try,
you serious?
Dog.
This is clear as day. Clear as day that Rico and the Bengals with Joe Burrow are going to be back to their level with the healthy QB in play. Ryan's not even going to have to punt that much this year. It's going to be the Bengals.
He's going to be busy, dog.
Okay. It'll probably be Kyle Van Noy or Fred Warner or the Chiefs. But, hey, one can dream, right? Rico and the Bengals back in the Super Bowl. Let's go.
One can dream.
All right.
At night when
you're
sleeping.
Let's continue on. Yes. Let's continue on with some basketball, shall we? It's a full show today.
Yes, it is. Men's basketball buzzing again. They've signed they're anticipating to sign another player. This player's committed. It's a 6'10 forward from Serbia. We'll tell you his name when we can tell you. We can throw up a graphic. There it is. He's a former European U20 tournament MVP in 2022, 6'10" shooter. Spence, what do you think of this and how he fits into the lineup as we read this from Fran Fischilla? BYU's added a 6'10 Serbian who played this season. He's former MVP. Da, da, da. While he was somewhat hidden on his pro team this year, he's an excellent athlete and outside shooter. He also added the following: I have no idea how good BYU men's basketball will be, but in the best league in the country this year, they're an absolute wild card. It's a given that Kansas, Houston, Baylor, Iowa State are top 10. But what's going on in Provo is crazy. What do you think of this, Spence? Again, we're still waiting for the official signing, but this player's already tweeted that he's coming, so we're good. I thought the roster was full, but no, they've added another good piece.
Nothing surprises me these days from Kevin Young and his staff. You know, when they first got Yegor Demon, I was like, hey, maybe BYU can get on this Gonzaga train and go international route. Like, they can become another Gonzaga.
The world's
they
on campus!
They have fully embraced this, Jeremy. It is unbelievable. And, you know, We've talked long about the Polynesian pipeline with BYU for football, right? Well, yep. Now BYU basketball has the FIBA funnel, my friend.
Hey,
they've got the FIBA funnel.
Oh, that's great.
Let's go. That's credit to my brother Trevor Linton for giving me that.
Of course, Trevor.
So shout out to Trevor. But I'm all in on it. This FIBA funnel with the alliteration. This is amazing. Just when you think, okay, Kevin Young, he has already done such an incredible job compiling BYU's most talented roster ever. And then, oh, by the way, here comes a dude that had declared for the NBA draft 2 years ago. This is crazy, the amount of talent and the depth. We always want to talk about depth. Well, this is real depth that BYU basketball has never experienced before, Jerem.
Okay, I was told that his comp is like Noah Waterman, who maybe can move a little quicker. He'll play the four. Sometimes he'll play the five if there's an issue in foul trouble or whatnot, or matchups with Cade or Foose if they're in foul trouble. So another shooter, another NBA body, a guy that has NBA aspirations and talent. Obviously, that's the kind of player that BYU is attracting, by the way. Which yesterday, of note, Kevin Young and three of his assistants visited Hurricane, Utah to see a noble, high-profile recruit. Las Vegas. Recruits in Hurricane, Las Vegas. So they had breakfast in Hurricane, lunch in Vegas, and then they had dinner at a five-stars house in Georgia. BYU's staff getting after it in men's hoops yesterday. If you're on Twitter, you know who exactly I'm talking about. We can't say the names quite yet, but that's awesome. Our poll question of the day, it's a poll today. How many road games do you expect BYU to win this season? 0 to 1, 2, 3, 4 plus. Right now, we've got a tie between 2 and 3 at 36.6% at Shane 00 on X. I want this to be Shane Reese so bad. 3, SMU, Wyoming, Utah. Hey, that Utah road win is probably worth a couple.
Okay.
That would be awesome. Continue to weigh in on X, Facebook, and Instagram. Hey, get ready for BYU and SMU tomorrow starting at 5 Eastern. Spencer Linton live from Dallas on BYUSN Game Day on BYU TV, plus the boys back in studio here, and Cougar Pregame Live with Greg, Hance, Mitchell, Jason, 5 Eastern on BYU Radio. Up next, Ben Bywater joins us to preview tomorrow's game against SMU. Remember his pick 6 in 22? That was awesome. What does he want to see from the BYU defense defending two quarterbacks from SMU? This is BYU Sports Nation.
This portion of BYU Sports Nation is presented by the Tim Daly Auto Group, serving Utah since 1968.
You're feeling pretty confident rolling into SMU because you took care of business.
Isaiah just swinging the mitts out. And it's intercepted. Jacob Robinson.
On the road tends to shake people a little bit. BYU, I don't think, has that in this case. I think they realize they got to go there and take care of business.
They will try to do so tomorrow night against SMU. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation in Provo, Utah. I'm Jerem Jordan. We'll be with Spencer Linton in Dallas in the next segment. Earlier this morning, I talked to Ben Bywater, former BYU linebacker, about his thoughts on matching up with a team that he had a pick six against in 22, the BYU defense, Jay Hill, and much more. Ben, welcome to the show, man. First off, I want to talk about your huge play against the SMU Mustangs 2 years ago in the New Mexico Bowl in 2022. What do you remember about that pick six that I assume is the greatest play of your career?
Man, I was just saying, I watch that every morning as I get out of the shower, get me going for the day, you know, now that I'm in the corporate world. So SMU is a great team. They have a great scheme. They go fast, right? Their tempo. So you got to be number one in good shape, and then you got to be able to make adjustments on the fly. So I know Jay Hill's going to have those boys dialed. I know Tyler, he texted me this week. He said, hey, send me some of your notes from 2022. And so I know those guys are preparing the best they can. I'm excited to see what they do.
Does someone need to have a pick six in this game for BYU to win like you did?
I'm calling it right now. My guy, Isaiah Glasker.
Hey.
Pick six, one-handed, of the crib. All right. You heard it here first.
Dude, Isaiah's awesome. So he's a starting Sam or strong linebacker, strong side. He's super athletic. We saw him have a great TFL among some great other plays against Southern Illinois. What do you expect from Isaiah Glasker this year?
Isaiah's one of those guys that he's, you know, got that God-given ability to just do everything, right? He's long, he's fast, he's physical. So it's going to be him just – that's my boy, right? I loved being able to help coach him, help him, and – for him, the sky's the limit, and he's just got to go ball, stay healthy. That's the biggest thing. I mean, as you guys know, right, you know, my health is what kind of halted my career. So it's all about staying healthy, but also playing fast and just hoping the football gods reward you. But Glasker is one of those guys that I love to watch, and I'm excited to see his career take off.
How else would you assess the BYU linebackers in game one? We saw a lot of guys play, but notably Harrison Taggart and Jack Kelly were the other starters at Mike or middle and Rover or the weak side linebacker. How did they perform?
Oh, I mean, I was very confident, you know, as I couldn't play anymore. I knew those guys were going to just take the torch and run with it. Jack Kelly's such a stud. I love that he's so versatile. He can drop into coverage. He's fast. He can play the run. And then off the edge, right, he's a weapon there. And then Harry Taggart, one of those guys that you need on the team. He's going to go put his nose in, get tackles, do everything you need as a middle backer. But I also loved watching Che, watching Sione Moa, Ice, all the boys get reps. It made me so happy just because I know those guys worked so hard, their tails off. And what's great about game one is that you get all the wiggles out. You can just reassess week in and week out and then get better as the games go on.
Certainly, BYU's defense played very well. You could always use more than one takeaway, more than two sacks, but after only 11 last year, certainly two feels like a step in the right direction. One thing to work on, though, certainly is the fact that DJ Williams ran for 121 yards last week as the quarterback. This week, BYU's preparing for two quarterbacks who can both run, especially Kevin Jennings, who's reeling off almost 10 yards per carry. What's the challenge as a defense in preparing for two guys and two guys that can run, one of them is really good at it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, dual threat quarterbacks are so hard to prepare for because, if they can throw the ball right, you want to make sure that you're covering your bases on the back end. But then your D-line, that's where your D-line's got to have a big week, right? They got to contain the quarterback. Don't let him run. Close the pocket. Get in windows. So I think the D-line's going to have a big week this week. And especially with the tempo that they go on. Dual threat quarterbacks. I love preparing for those guys, but the backer's got to be able to drop, close windows, and then when he starts scrambling, you got to run. You got to go close the gap, close ground, and make tackles. So it'll be a great challenge for him, so I'm excited.
Ben Bywater is joining us on BYU Sports Nation ahead of BYU and SMU. Certainly it's a different setup than 2 years ago in the New Mexico Bowl. Sol J. Maiava was starting. There was no Rashee Rice for SMU, who's now with the Chiefs. But here we are. SMU is a P4 program. BYU is too. It's in Dallas. What do you make of this matchup on a fun Friday night in Texas?
I think it's awesome. I lived in Dallas for a little bit growing up, but SMU is kind of like a little... In my opinion, it's where all kind of the rich kids in Dallas go, good looking people, you know, it's a Christian university. So, or Baptist, I don't even know, Methodist. Forgive me. I'm Methodist. I'm all over the place. However, it'll be a great religious battle. It'll be a great battle on the football field. It's going to be one of those things that I'm excited to watch. And SMU's no joke though. You got to come prepared. This might not be a Texas or Tennessee, but this is a game where if you're not careful, you're not coming to play, they can gash you. So I know these boys know that, I'm beating a dead horse right here. So, but BYU Nation, I think it's definitely a game worth watching, and I'm excited to see everybody, especially on a Friday night. Come on, you got to wake up the next morning. It's game day, right? Like it's kick the weekend off strong.
I love weekday games. I do, because it means I can watch more games on Saturday, even more, which is great. For some reason, my ward's having a barbecue at the exact same time. I'm like, does no one pay attention? We're like a BYU ward down in Mapleton. What are we doing? Okay, with BYU season, Spencer and I have talked about, we both think it's a 7-5 season, which is three wins above what Vegas thinks. Specifically on the road, BYU struggled, lost 5 in a row. Can BYU be 3-3 or better on the road? What wins on the road are you hoping to see for the Cougars, obviously starting tonight?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, for me, I played college football, and I know what it's like being in the locker room. It's just so different as a fan. Now that I'm a fan, I get it. Like, what people don't understand is that momentum and belief that is so important. You know, X's and O's is one thing, and then just quality of players and talent. But if you got a group of boys that believe in themselves and can go out there, play hard. Like, the sky's the limit. So I think this team can definitely go 7-5, if not better. And then feeling those road game wins, it's all about your belief, right? You know, in the night before. So if they can get a good thing going these first few games, you can carry that momentum and easily, you know, go steal a bunch of big games on the road. So that's my biggest advice. So just, hey, let's gas the boys any chance we can get. Let's just gas them up, make them feel good, and just build that momentum.
Hopefully they look at history too, which rarely does a current player go, oh, we're 4-0 against SMU. That means we should have some confidence. Like, as a player, did you even know, like, what's the series history? And that has no bearing on the current game. But as fans and media, I look at this and go, listen, keep that streak going. BYU's 4-0 against SMU. You needed you needed a two-point conversion stop in 22. You needed a Hail Mary in 80. You needed overtime in 97 with Kalani Sitake blocking as a fullback. Take me into what that was like as a player, where it's like, oh, the fans are talking about we've lost 5 road games in a row or whatever, but who cares? We're going to go win this one Friday.
Yeah, that's a great point you bring up. And the thing is, like, as a fan, you can get so into that, and that's what makes it so fun. But as a player, you really try to block out the outside noise, because I remember in 2022, we lost 4 games in a row, right? And then you really don't want to listen to the outside noise, because it'll start messing with your head. So, you know, you're never as good as they say you are. You're never as bad as they say you are. Try not to read the press, but absolutely respect every opponent. And then as far as a player, the week's moving so fast. Monday, you're recovering. Tuesday is a big day. Wednesday is install. Everything's moving so fast. I mean, very rarely did I have a chance to go dive into the details, but probably not the answer you want to hear, but those guys are just so laser focused, right? And so you have to be.
I just want to hear the truth. That's what we're about here in Provo, Ben.
That's okay, the truth. I'm sorry.
Let's talk about what happened with Jay Hill. Thursday night, has a heart attack, goes to the hospital, has 2 stents put in. Friday, he FaceTimes with the team from the hospital. Saturday, he shows up at the stadium. Monday, he's back in the office working, getting ready for this game, man. What was your reaction to what happened with Jay Hill, and then obviously the inspiration of him wanting to be at the stadium?
Well, I was surprised because he's so fit. Like, I would always see him on runs. He'd be running around campus, and, like, the guy's got pecs for days. I was like, how's this guy having this issue? Like, he's in great shape. But, you know, it doesn't surprise me him getting back and recovering. That guy's so resilient. I mean, you've heard the story about him and his wife.
Yep.
Back when he's at Weber State. Just that guy has, like, what a testament to what just a man, right? Like, he's done so many hard things, overcome them, persevered, prevailed, and, you know, he always comes out on top. So this is just a little hiccup in the road for Jay, and, like, just I draw inspiration from that, because, you know, life's not always linear. You're always going to have little issues, nicks and bumps and bruises, and for him to do that, I think if I was a player, I'd be juiced up. I'd be like, my coach is out here, you know, coming back coaching 2 days after a heart attack. Like, what a baller. So that's the guy that BYU's got. And I'm honestly, I love seeing that. I'm excited to just see him keep the ball rolling, because he's a firecracker.
Jay's the man. Ben, I can't tell if you're going to go bowling or go mix some concrete, but you might do both today. I'm not sure. We appreciate the time.
Versatile.
Good look, good stuff, and thanks, Ben.
Hey, Jerem, love you, boss. You're the man.
Who doesn't love Ben Bywater? He's awesome. BYU women's volleyball taking on Lipscomb tonight in game 1 of the BYU Nike Invitational. 9 Eastern on ESPN+. Kenzie, Daly, and myself on the call. Women's soccer got back in the win column last night. We'll show you how they did it. Some spectacular goals. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation from Provo and Dallas with Jerem Jordan and Spencer Linton. Great to have you with us. In honor of 100 seasons of Cougar football, we always say, what's going on historically on this day in Cougar football? We have not one, but 2 games to talk about today, Spence.
Indeed. Let's start with the first game. Rewind to 2009, number 20 BYU opening the season against reigning Heisman Trophy winner and 3rd-ranked Oklahoma, led by Sam Bradford at Jerry's World right here in Dallas. Max Hall connected with Andrew George to tie the game at 7. Colby Clawson, of course, laid the hit on Bradford as he threw, injuring his shoulder and knocking him out for the season. In the second half, BYU trailing 13-7 with 4 minutes left. Hall connecting with Dennis Pitta for a huge fourth down conversion that set up the game-winning touchdown pass to McKay Jacobson. BYU wins 14-13.
The Provo rejoiced, literally. It was madness. It was crazy. Second game, 2015 season opener at Nebraska. The Cornhuskers had won 29 straight home openers. Taysom Hill, hot start, scoring three touchdowns before leaving the game with a Liz Frank. Oh, devastating. Freshman quarterback Tanner Mangum, 2 months off his mission with a helmet too big for him. Replace Hill. 1 second to go. Down to the goal line. Into the wind. Mitch Matthews with the Hail Mary. And BYU wins 33-28. An amazing play between those two who are now inseparably connected in BYU football history. How about September 5th? That's a good one. Let's get to today's headlines.
That's a great day. Indeed, BYU football on the road. They travel today to Dallas for their game against SMU tomorrow night. Pregame coverage begins on Friday, 5 p.m. Eastern, live on BYU TV and BYU Radio, with kickoff slated for 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2.
Kingsley Suamataia makes his NFL debut tonight for Andy Reid's Kansas City Chiefs against Kyle Van Noy and the Ravens. That's a fun matchup. I was telling my 6-year-old about it today. He's like, no way, this is great. Suamataia was named the Chiefs' starting left tackle. KVN coming off a career-high season with 9 sacks.
BYU basketball signs a 6'10" Serbian forward yesterday who apparently could shoot the three to round out their 2024-2025 roster. Can't say his name yet due to compliance issues. We play by the rules. But he is a former MVP of the FIBA Europe U20 tournament and is an excellent player on top of being a great outside shooter. The FIBA funnel in full swing.
And to be clear, BYU has not signed him. They've gotten a commitment. We're waiting for the signing. Then they'll announce him. That's how it works. Women's soccer beats Boise State 2-0 last night to get in the win column. They had a 4-game beaten streak. Freshman Ella Labrum got the scoring started in the 15th minute. Then Hallie Dixon added this goal from outside the box in the 18th.
Dixon veering to her right. Dixon gives it a ride and scores a banger! Bar down for Hallie Dixon. It's 2-0, and what a shot and score!
After a couple of 1-1 draws and then losses to UCLA and Utah State, nice to get back in the win column there. Labrum and Dixon goals, first of their careers. Awesome. BYU improves to 2-2-2 on the season.
Number 14 BYU women's volleyball plays Lipscomb in game one of the BYU Nike Invitational tonight at the Smith Field House. You can watch the game live, 9 Eastern on ESPN+. Jerem Jordan on the call.
The Action Network's Brett McMurphy reported this a few minutes ago. Big 12 commish Brett Yormark is pausing discussions about adding UConn for right now. Here's what he said about the decision. As commissioner, it's my responsibility to explore a variety of value-creating opportunities on behalf of the Big 12. Following detailed discussions with my conference colleagues alongside UConn leadership, we've jointly decided to pause our conversations at this time. We will instead focus our attention and resources to ushering in this new era of college athletics.
Daniel Schneeman got the start yesterday for the first place Cleveland Guardians in the AL Central in a 4-1 loss of the Kansas City Royals. Schneeman 0-for-2 in the game, but his team's in first place. That's all that really matters, right?
No, I just care about Daniel Schneeman. I don't need the Guardians to speak up. And congrats to former BYU head women's track and field coach Craig Poole, who will be inducted to the Utah Sports Hall of Fame on September 19th. He was the head coach of the women's track and field team for 30 years. Congratulations to Craig. Well deserved. After the break, we'll get a look at Jake Retzlaff's journey to becoming a Division I quarterback in the newest Deep Blue. This is BYU Sports Nation. Nation live from Studio B in Dallas. We'll check in with Spencer coming up in the next segment. Well, after putting in the work on the field to see his dream of becoming a D1 quarterback come true, Jake Retzlaff saw that dream taken away from him after just 3 days. He returned to put the work in on the field and off the field and saw his dream fulfilled now here at BYU. This is Deep Blue featuring Jake Retzlaff.
Going into my senior year of high school, I was kind of slated to be the starting quarterback.
And then COVID hit, and we weren't sure we were going to have a season, and we were doing all kinds of things in hope of that happening in terms of preparing.
So I went from, like, let's go win a state championship, guys, to is there going to be a state championship?
He was working hard throughout his whole youth and high school career, and then when he was supposed to showcase that, everything shut down. Everything was canceled.
We were doing Zoom meetings and stuff like that, and the kids would sometimes talk about, you know, we'd talk about, hey, where'd you work out? What have you been doing? You know, some guys did not have access to weight room, some did. Jake was underneath the trailer, bench pressing from the floor. I sent that to everybody. I go, hey, your quarterback's found a way to work out. What are you doing? You know, type of thing.
And we worked out there every day with no idea where the season might have been down the horizon, just kind of kept grinding forward.
No one had experienced this before, so there was no way of figuring out, okay, where do we go from there? And because he had no exposure, then the additional year that college athletes were given after COVID, because there was no playing that year, that really affected coaches going out and recruiting too.
It was kind of finally decided, like, the junior college route is the likely route. So it was kind of start looking around. And my brother was already at Riverside City College, which was one of the top teams in the country. He was one of their top receivers.
Coach Kraft was kind of just like, I have six guys. I already have six, seven guys. I already have a full plate of who to figure out to be the starter. And more of just, I can't take on another guy.
That was told to me, and I was like, all right, whatever you say, dude. I'm going to go where I'm wanted, and I'm going to succeed there. And so I went to Golden West College.
Game four of the regular season features the Rustlers of Golden West and the RCC Tigers. They're the reigning national champions and hope to keep this going. They are 3-0 as RCC this season.
First time I saw Jake play was the Riverside Golden West game.
Play fake for Retzlaff, who dives in. It's a Golden West touchdown.
And was very impressed with him. We almost felt like the coaching staff for Golden West had our plays and our signals on defense. He was that good.
I thought that was the best way of, instead of Jake being upset or disappointed that Tom was not interested, and show him what he missed. And that's kind of the way the attitude was.
RCC desperate for a stop, and they will not get it. Touchdown Golden West. Retzlaff throws his fourth score of the football game. He finds the tight end leaking out on the left side.
During my time at Golden West, I developed in a lot of ways. I kind of found my lane as a quarterback. I figured out, like, my identity. You know, I was looking around at some point in the season when we're undefeated. You know, I know we're going to playoffs. We're about to win the league. All right, where's the recruitment? Let's get the recruitment going. Like, let's kind of get this going. It still wasn't that loud in my corner. There wasn't a lot going on.
So I heard from his dad that he's going to take a trip to UTEP.
And we're stoked because finally Division I coaches are looking at him. So we were really excited, and we go out there, have a great weekend.
I was like, all right, let's go. That's the best opportunity in front of me. Let's go. And so I ended up actually committing and then going on my visit, which is a little unusual, but that's how it went. And so what I did for my visit, I actually drove out there, which is 12 hours. I'm here. I did it. I got over the hump. I got myself a scholarship. I'm in the building. I'm in my new little apartment and with my roommate who's on the team. I get to lay my head down at night for the first time with a sense of relief. It was like, oh man, it's nice to be here in this uncomfortable little twin size bed, whatever it was. Go to sleep, wake up the next morning to a phone call from the offensive coordinator. And he calls me and says, hey Jake, we just got your transcripts and you're a few credits short of what you need to qualify for the scholarship.
Jake had my husband talk to me and tell me because he knew what my reaction would be.
Like, there was no way for me to, like, deliver that news to someone who'd sacrificed so much for me and done so much for me. I was like, I couldn't do it.
Jake had told Steve that he's driving back home because he academically did not qualify.
I can't even put into words, like, my initial reaction. It's like you climbed the mountain and then got thrown right back down. That was a tough drive. It was 12 hours, you know, when you feel like oncoming traffic looks tempting. It's definitely a low point and probably the lowest point of, you know, my life, honestly. Just because of how good the high was of finally being there, getting told, well, sorry, you gotta go home and fix this. You gotta go back to junior college and try again. What I did is I actually enrolled in Riverside because it was closer to home. I ended up meeting with Coach Tom Kraft and saying, hey, I think my best move is to start working out with you guys.
What happened was he was so focused on trying to get looked at by college coaches that he did. He put his academics behind him, and he realized very fast that you can't do that. And then Jake learned he had to prove himself again academically, and he did. I guess it was a blessing in disguise, because if he ended up at UTEP, he would have never been looked at by BYU.
Jake's a guy that we recruited out of junior college, which is rare these days. There's not very many junior college quarterbacks to get recruited anymore.
When this whole recruiting process started and we were actually really starting to vet him out, I just knew him as a great thrower, you know, a really talented guy. As I got to know Jake, now in hindsight, you know, this guy's been such a gift to BYU, as not just to our team, but to the institution. The first example that comes to mind in handling adversity is the 99-yard interception pick six against Oklahoma last year.
He chased the guy all the way to the goal line, 100 yards.
Literally sprinting the whole length of the field and almost making the stop.
He didn't look around for any excuses. He just knew what he needed to get done.
And he had to run off the field feeling terrible.
When he came back to the sideline, his lips were blue. He could barely breathe. He could not stand up straight.
And he went right back on the field and drove us down for a touchdown to take the lead again.
The way he responded to that is a microcosm of how he responds to adversity.
You need that. You need quarterbacks with short memories, whether it's good or bad. You need them to move on, and we can always count on him to move on, whether it's a great result or a bad result. And that's evidence in how he reacted to that.
Going from Corona Centennial to Golden West to UTEP for 3 days or a weekend, then to Riverside for a year, and then finally at BYU, it's been incredible. And from the beginning, it was just about getting over the hill and proving the guys wrong who didn't want me out of Centennial, who didn't want me at this level, and then, you know, proving the guys right who gave me the chance at a place like BYU.
QB1, incredible. Check out the latest Deep Blue podcast featuring BYU running back Hinkley Ropati. Opens up about his mother's sudden passing, what would make her proud, how his faith helps him in tough times. You can find it wherever you get podcasts. Coming up after the break, how many road games do you expect BYU football to win this season? This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
A couple years ago, President Russell M. Nelson said, hey, if you need help with something, ask the missionaries. That's Josh Hewitt, BYU football equipment manager, who is having the missionaries help him unload on, you know, I don't know if it's preparation day. You're not supposed to on preparation day, I think. Apparently, I know all the rules according to the safety zone. But, Spence, the missionaries were helping out a minute ago. That's cool.
Amazing situational awareness by those group of missionaries, Jerem, to show up and show out and do their thing. Really fun that the church does have that network, though, that they can just tap into and be
right?
Like, hey, we need some help. We have some people down here in like 5 minutes, and they're like, yeah, sure, we'll be there. It's unique for sure, but cool to see him back here helping out.
Did they holler at you? Did they yell safety zone at you?
You know, we were trying to get their attention, notably Junior Phillips and David Holliday and my road crew. They like to give me a hard time occasionally about my role in the safety zone. They were trying to like hey, safety zone! But they weren't paying attention.
They were dialed in. They
were
focused.
Actually doing work.
Yeah, fancy yeah, that.
All good.
They were actually doing work. Our poll question of the day. How many road games do you expect BYU football to win this season? 0-1, 2-3, 4-plus. The winner ends up being 3 at 39%, 2 right after
Ooh.
That. You and I both said, hey, BYU needs to go 3-3, so not shocking result there. Wyoming and Baylor says Kurt JB 07. Then I feel like we should win at least one of SMU, UCF, or ASU. Didn't include Utah in that one, so I see you, but all good. Our elite voice of the day, presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated at 86WI on X. The next two would be a nice start. That would be SMU, Wyoming. Three are needed for sure if they want to win 6-plus wins and get to a bowl game. Probably, yeah. Right? Like 4-2
yes.
At home is what I think BYU would. That's ambitious. It really is.
4-2 and then 3-3. This is the way, is it not,
yes.
To get to 7 for
BYU? That's the key.
This is the way, Jerem.
Today's Rise and Shout Out, presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
Let's go ahead and give it to Taysom Hill, named a captain by his peers for the New Orleans Saints.
That's awesome.
We talked about him as one of a kind. I think he's just because he's so unique, he deserves to be in the NFL Top 100 players list. Well, now he's a captain. His teammates think so.
Absolutely. Thanks to today's guest, Ben Bywater.
Conversation continues 24/7 on X, Instagram, and Facebook. All of our shows on demand, BYUSN.com.
Sorry to Dennis Pitt, we ran out of time. For Spencer in Dallas and our crew, I'm Jerem in Provo. Shout out to Margin Hooks. We'll see you tonight on ESPN Plus for number 14 women's volleyball against Lipscomb. Go Cougs!